by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the
secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got some very, very important news clips today and some also important commentary. The first clip that we're going to be setting up for you to listen to is an interview of Dr. Sherry Tenpenny by Alex Jones. Now, this is a very, very important clip to listen to. We're including about 17 minutes of it, but we'll have a click off on our site, thesecrettruth.com, where you can listen to the total interview. But I put this at the beginning because it's very important about the vaccine that is being proffered out there as a great solution. So you should listen very carefully to this because it has some very, very important and very disturbing information in it. And I'd be very wary about these vaccines or even immunizations. But be careful in your medicine or your drug taking. So here we go with this interview now.
I mean, this is a well-designed killing tool. Language is important, and everything that we say gets totally scrubbed and scrutinized these days. So I think to say it accurately is important. The messenger RNA that gets injected in with this shot co-opts a little piece of machinery in your body called the ribosomes. The ribosomes read the recipe, and as it reads the recipe, it makes this protein called the spike protein. That spike protein is supposed to be the same protein that's on the surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and is supposed to be at least similar to the spike proteins on the circulating coronaviruses that have been out there for more than 60 years. And so this spike protein, what it does on the surface of the virus is it acts like a key and binds to something called an ACE receptor on the surface of your cells. When that virus takes its key and binds to the ACE receptor, it opens the door and allows the virus to go in and start to replicate. So what they're trying to do is to develop an antibody to that spike protein to block the key from getting into the lock so it can't get inside the cell and start to replicate. Because the antibody is not made to the entire virus, it's made to a small little piece called a spike protein. So it doesn't behave as the same way an antibody does that is to maybe measles or chickenpox or shingles or mumps or something like that. So the problem is, Alex, is that we are injecting mRNA that has a recipe in it to build a protein to make an antibody against the protein that is supposed to keep us healthy and keep us from getting sick. Yes. We have no idea how long the protein's going to last. We have no idea how long the antibody's going to be around. We have no idea how long the antibody's going to last. We don't know how long they're going to continue to, the B cells are going to be active. We have no idea because we have no long-term studies. And every single one of those steps makes you susceptible to illness for the entire population for an unknown period, maybe the rest of your life, that you may be susceptible to autoimmune disease, shock, allergies, and death from something that is supposed to keep you from getting sick. Well, good afternoon, Alex, and it's nice to be back. And yes, I think we have known each other. I've been doing this for just over 20 years. It started in September of 2000. I've put well over 40,000 hours worth of research into this over the years. And most recently, in the last year, since March of last year, I've done over 400 interviews. Small ones, big ones, international ones, podcasts, radio, television, just carpet bombing the world to the best that I can to tell people the problems with this entire COVID thing. Between the myth of the mask, the fraud of the PCR testing, the horrors that are going to come down the road with this shot, the problems, the psychological problems with the social distancing and the non-touching. I mean, it's a really, really big problem. It's a big mess. And I do have a clinic here in Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here since 1996. I don't have clinics all over the world. I do speak all over the world back in the day when you could travel. But I just want to commend you, Alex, because I think about you often and all the years that you've had Prison Planet and you've had, you know, InfoWars that everybody thought you were the conspiracy theory nut. And here we are exactly living what you've been broadcasting about for 20 plus years. Thank you for staying the course and being strong no matter what they've been trying to do to you.
Well, we'll be back at you. And that's the thing about I'm not that old, but getting older, my memory remembers something, and sometimes it's somebody else. I know you've put on clinics, you've trained doctors, you've trained clinics. I thought you didn't have a clinic in Mexico?
I worked at a hospital in Mexico. I was the director of a medical hospital there for about a year and a half. So that's sure, probably so, what so you're remembering.
So my memory hasn't totally failed, exactly. Because where I like to measure me, I'm not trying to get it wrong, but I don't use a teleprompter, so I get it quite a bit wrong. So thanks for correcting me. So we got about 5 minutes to break. There's so many areas, the cult of the mask, the medical takeover. But let's talk about front and center. Your predictions about it causing deaths, when they take it and later, it's now coming true. How did you know that? Lay it out for us.
Well, I've spent hundreds of hours plowing through the medical literature, looking at all of these things associated with this new type of shot. We can't even call it a vaccine, Alex, because it doesn't meet any of the criteria, the legal criteria of what a vaccine is supposed to do. A vaccine is supposed to keep you from getting sick. This doesn't. And in their stated literature, they say it probably won't keep you from getting sick or prevent anything. It may decrease your risk of serious infections, and it may cut down the duration of your symptoms, but it in no way says anything about keeping you from getting sick, which is what a vaccine is supposed to do. The second thing is supposed to stop the spread of infection. Well, they've already said it doesn't do that. It's not intended to decrease hospitalizations, and it's not going to lower the death rate because the death rate is already extraordinarily low because, as you know, and I'm sure you've reported on it many times, the COVID numbers about death are absolutely fabricated, and we will never be able to sort that out and know the truth. So it's not a vaccine, and I'm encouraging everyone to understand the only reason they call it a vaccine is, number one, to get billions of dollars of funding. Number two, to get the protection of the 2005 PrEP Act as a covered countermeasure as a vaccine. And number three, we have a multi-generational indoctrinations that still, beyond all the work you've done, I've done, and others have done over the last 20 years, people still believe that vaccines are safe, thoroughly tested, which they're not. They think they're going to keep you from getting sick, which they don't. They think they're absolutely necessary, which they're not. And they don't cause any harm, which is a flat-out lie. And so the vast majority of people have been multi-generationally indoctrinated to the concept of vaccine. So when they hear about the COVID vaccine, they think, oh, it's just like another flu shot. Oh, doesn't coronavirus cause the flu? So this is just like getting another flu shot. And if I can get this shot, please stop calling it a vaccine. If I can get this shot or this injection, then I can just go back to normally living life, which you won't. They told you you still have to wear a mask. You still have to social distance. You still have to contact trace. It's not going to keep you from getting sick. As a matter of fact, and I know that we'll talk about this throughout the rest of the show, I have mapped out 10 mechanisms of entry of how when you get this injection, when you get this messenger RNA, or you get the spike protein that's already been genetically modified and made and inserted into an adenovirus for the J&J shot, when you get this spike protein antibody in your system, it will permanently and irreversibly change your immune system. And And so I've mapped out 10 mechanisms of how that happens. And if I've come up with 10, there's probably more that I just haven't come across yet. Because I, when I first started talking about it, Alex, I said there were 4, which then went to 7, and now I've got it up to 10. And as I continue to investigate and research on the problems with this anti-spike antibody, which is the whole purpose of getting this injection, they're injecting something in you, a messenger RNA, or a piece of protein that's going to be, that is the spike protein. The whole purpose of having the spike protein in your circulation is to develop an antibody against that spike protein. In theory, that means the next time that you come in contact with a coronavirus or specifically the SARS-CoV-2 virus, that antibody should block you from getting sick. Not only does it not block you from getting sick, the antibody itself is going to turn on your body and create havoc and massive autoimmune disease.
Not a cytokine storm.
No, not cytokine storm. It's autoimmune disease. When the antibody itself attacks your organs by molecular mimicry, which we can talk about more
We'll stay there because I'm not a doctor like you. I just read all these reports, and that's what Wolfgang Wurdog said. He said it'll cause the autoimmune disorder. It'll also cause a big allergic reaction. He just said it's a nightmare, and it doesn't even work against what they're saying. So why are they doing it? That's the big question. We'll get into the 10 ways it hurts you, but why would they try something this bold, this crazy, and then now it's killing people and maiming them? And everybody knows people dying and getting sick. What's the master plan? And what's incredible is there's, again, Wolfgang Wodarg, heads of an EU advisory commission. The former chief scientist of Pfizer joined him on December 1st last year and tried to file a lawsuit to block authorization of the mRNA vaccines of Pfizer and others. And now major governments from Switzerland to South Africa to India are saying no to mRNA vaccines. Australia had to stop their vaccine because it had HIV positives, false positives happening. And so I'm no medical doctor. I'm just reading this. And then India says we're not going to approve it. And then Bill Gates's news guard says it's not true, even though it's on Indian TV and did happen. So there's incredible disinformation. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has been a leading doctor, and she's not in competition. She loves the cavalry with people like Robert Kennedy Jr. But she's been there really for 20 years because she saw this in her own clinics, saw with her patients saying, hey, we got a problem here. Well, this isn't traditional vaccine with all of its contaminants and problems. We know that's a real science, though. This is mRNA reprogramming people's bodies and a protein that's in the placenta, that's in the cells, teaching the body that's bad. What could go wrong? And then here's the question I was asking, and then get back into the 10 points, Dr. Tenpenny. Why would they try something this reckless and crazy knowing it's going to cause these problems? They're not stupid. Please take over.
Well, you're right about that, Alex. These people are not stupid, and they can read the medical literature as well as I can. And as well as any other physician that has, and there's a lot of us that are now starting to speak out. A lot of us relative to the total number of physicians. We're still tiny, but there are more and more physicians who are actually reading the medical literature. Imagine that. And they're understanding the problems with this. I mean, this is a well-designed killing tool. I mean, it's not a vaccine. It's an injection or a shot. We call it a genetic modification technology. And I think it's really important for your viewers to get it straight and to get it right about how this messenger RNA works, because a lot of the mainstream press is saying, oh, you conspiracy theorists, anti-vaccine people are all saying that messenger RNA changes your DNA, and it does not. And guess what? They're right. It doesn't. Because how the process works, if you have DNA through an enzyme called reverse transcriptase, it makes a mirror copy of it called messenger RNA, which is what gets injected into your body. That messenger RNA, it goes through a system called the ribosomes and creates a protein. That protein can get reincorporated into your DNA by a process called transfection. So the messenger RNA can indirectly change your DNA, your genetics, but not directly. And I think language is important, and everything that we say gets totally scrubbed and scrutinized these days. So I think to say it accurately is important. The messenger RNA that gets injected in with this shot co-opts a little piece of machinery in your body called the ribosomes. The ribosomes, think about the messenger RNAs having a recipe in it. That's what they, when they say it's been encoded, think about it as having a recipe. The ribosomes read the recipe, and as it reads the recipe, it makes this protein called the spike protein. That spike protein is supposed to be the same protein that's on the surface of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and is supposed to be at least similar to the spike proteins on the circulating coronaviruses that have been out there for more than 60 years. We know that there is somewhere between 35 and 45 coronaviruses out there, individual ones. We know that 7 of them can infect humans. And so this spike protein, what it does on the surface of the virus is it acts like a key and binds to something called an ACE receptor on the surface of your cells. When that virus takes its key and binds to this, to the ACE receptor, it opens the door and allows the virus to go in and start to replicate. So what they're trying to do is to develop an antibody to that spike protein to block the key from getting into the lock so it can't get inside the cell and start to replicate. All that sounds great. It all sounds good in theory. The problem is that when that antibody to that spike protein is made, it's an abnormal antibody. It's called a non-neutralizing antibody because the antibody is not made to the entire virus. It's made to a small little piece called a spike protein. So it doesn't behave as the same way an antibody does that is to maybe measles or chickenpox or shingles or mumps or something like that. So that antibody has a lot of characteristics with it that causes a lot of problems. The other thing about an antibody, if people listen to this, if you're just listening, you're not watching. If you're just listening, visualize in your mind that what an antibody actually looks like is a capital letter Y. The two upper arms of the Y are called the FAB segments, Frank Appleberry, the FAB fragments. And the stem of the letter Y is called the FAC fragment. The FAB fragment at the top is what grabs hold of viruses or particles of bacteria or things and neutralizes it and makes it go away. But in this case, it's the FAC fragment, the stem of that antibody, that causes a lot of problems. For one thing, that stem of that antibody can bind to tissue in your lungs. It can bind to eosinophils, basophils, and other types of receptors that can cause anaphylactic shock. It can cause all kinds of problems with direct modification of your macrophages. It can cross-react with human tissue and create autoimmune disorders. So this antibody is the problem. Both the FAB portion and the FAC portion, both of those individually cause a bunch of different havoc. So the problem is, Alex, is that we are injecting mRNA that has a recipe in it to build a protein to make an antibody against the protein that is supposed to keep us healthy and keep us from getting sick. But instead what we're doing is we're creating a process that antibody replication will be there forever because of B cell sensitization. And we have no idea how long the messenger RNA continues to make it be translated and create the proteins. We have no idea how long that protein lasts in your system.
So this is mass.
Wait, go ahead.
Yes.
We have no idea how long the protein's going to last. We have no idea how long the antibody's going to be around. We have no idea how long the antibody's going to last. We don't know how long they're going to continue to, the B cells are going to be active. We have no idea because we have no long-term studies. And every single one of those steps makes you susceptible to illness for the entire population for an unknown period, maybe the rest of your life, that you may be susceptible to autoimmune disease, shock, allergies, and death from something that is supposed to keep you from getting sick.
We got a long segment coming up. I want you to get into this more when we come back, but all I was going to say is this is illegal mass experimentation. They skipped the animal trials. I want to ask you when we come back why they did that. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, medical doctor, great lady. You've got quite a few sites, quite a few things I've seen. Where's the best place for people to find your suppressed information that's all right out of the medical literature?
DrTenpenny.com. It's DR, no period, drtenpenny.com, drtenpenny.com. All of our many different educational opportunities, our social media links, my podcasts, all of that stuff can all be found off of the navigation bar. Everything's now collated in one place at drtenpenny.com, drtenpenny.com. You can find it all.
Dr. Tenpenny is very, very fine physician. She's a doctor of osteopathy. So she graduated from that school, osteopath, in Kirksville, Missouri. But she's really a fine lady. She's had tremendous experience in this area. So she's someone to really stand up and listen to. We filmed a debate hosted by Donna Campbell out at the University of Texas one year where Tenpenny was there with two other panel members, and they were debating the Texas Health Department panel on these very subjects. And there was a photograph that I'll put up, but it will also on our site shows me over there recording this. And I'm trying to find that recording now so I can put that up. I don't have my hands on it yet. But anyway, it was quite a debate that Dr. Donna Campbell moderated at that time. And so anyway, I'll at least put the photograph up of me and the photograph that Lady Quinn took of me. But anyway, we go back a little ways with this Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and she's really a stand-up person. The next clip we're going to be putting up, listening to, is Laura Ingram. And she's talking about the new DA out there in L.A. County going loggerheads with the sheriff out there. And Villanueva is a sheriff out there, and he is really up against Alex Villanueva. Is the sheriff, and he's going, Gascon is the new DA of LA County, and they are really at loggerheads. But anyway, this is what has happened since he's taken over out there. The crime is way, way up, and we've got a governor also, but they're trying to recall him, the DA, and also they have 1.9 signatures to recall the governor out there, in California. So things are beginning to get, you know, interesting in California. But here's the Laura Ingram talking with the L.A. County Sheriff about a possible recall of the DA out there in L.A. County. Here we go now with this.
And Gavin Newsom isn't the only California politician facing a recall. The radical DA there, he's also facing a serious challenge.
About infighting, Los Angeles County District Attorney George Gascon is at odds with L.A. law enforcement, victim rights advocates, even his own staff who sued him and won. The suit was over Gascon putting an end to sentencing enhancements like California's three strikes law. And it turns out the felons are also privy to Gascon's far-left criminal reform agenda. For example, a Sacramento inmate serving a life sentence was about to be transferred to a prison in Los Angeles County, so he devised a plan to get his sentence reduced, then shared the plan with the L.A. County DA's office. Listen. Gascon's policies are boosting crime, and the numbers support that. The L.A. County Sheriff says in the first 2 months of this year compared to last, homicides are up 170%, aggravated assault 13% up, car theft up 75%, and arson up 41%. That's a big reason victims' rights groups have launched a recall effort. Watch.
For us to have to walk these streets again with them on the street, knowing that they're going to do it again, it's not fair. Please, just get this man out of here.
The recall effort needs to gather 580,000 voter signatures in 5 months, and a recall vote likely wouldn't hit the ballot until 2022. In the meantime, the public battle between the L.A. County DA and L.A. County Sheriff goes on. Laura.
Trace, this is fascinating. And now L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva joins me now. Sheriff, how important is it to all the victims of crime out there in California and potential crime victims that Gascon be removed from office as soon as possible?
Well, it's extremely important because he represents, his policies represent a threat to not only victims of crime, but just your average law-abiding citizen anywhere throughout the county. You read the statistics on the rising crime rate, and now he's reducing the consequences for violent crime, reducing gang enhancements, gun enhancements, multiple victim enhancements, all these things, death penalty, all these things that are traditionally used to keep the worst of the worst locked away in keeping the public out of harm's way. He's opening the doors, opening the floodgates so all these people can hit the streets as earliest date possible, according to him. And that, I cannot support that.
Now, during a lecture at USC's law school, this happened last year, Gascon gave a really twisted version of the history of policing.
Policing in this country started to do what in many parts of the South?
Catch slaves.
It's to catch slaves and bring them back. And then after the Civil War, it was to keep black people in their place.
So, Sheriff, that is incendiary. Okay, so prisons are like modern-day slavery. That's nothing to do with crimes committed. It has nothing to do with the need for retributive punishment. None of that. It's about slavery. What does that do to community and race relations?
Well, the sad thing is that our black and our Latino communities in L.A. are the ones that are going to bear the brunt of his ill-advised policies because the overrepresentation of victims of crime is in the black and Latino communities. And unfortunately, they're the ones that are going to take the brunt of it, and the people supporting these policies are far removed from the problem. They're behind their gated mansions, their secure communities, manicured lawns, where they don't really have the problem, the day-to-day survival situation that a lot of these residents live in because of the high crime rates.
Now, he also hired one prosecutor who used to be a defense attorney, a criminal defense attorney, a public defender named Tiffany Blacknow. And she's so radical, she wants to abolish prisons altogether. And then she sent out a tweet calling the LAPD barbarians. So those are the types of people he chooses to hire as prosecutors? Are you kidding me?
It doesn't end there, unfortunately. We have the district attorney formerly had an office known as the Crimes Against Peace Officers, the COPPO unit. He's seeking to undermine or dismantle that unit. There's other, the hardcore gang division of the district attorney.
Sheriff, the support in the black and Latino community for recalling him, what is it, given the fact that they're going to be the victims of this increased crime rate?
Oh, the support, I believe, is going to be very strong. And if you look at the LaWanda Hawkins, for example, she represents mothers of murdered children. She is out there on the front lines. These are the people demanding this recall. And my job is to support victims of crime and where they want to go. And I'm definitely here to support them.
Sheriff, thank you so much for speaking out. I know this is a very unusual dynamic with the sheriff versus the DA. You guys generally have a great working relationship. So this is just untenable. It's unsustainable. Thank you so much.
The Democrats seem to have this drive to discredit anything that Trump's administration accomplished in any even productive and positive way. They have to discredit it and go the opposite. So it's the antithesis of the good that he was doing that the Biden administration is mounting. And here's Psaki, the press secretary, stating that we're not doing anything like the Trump administration. And so when they're not doing anything like the Trump administration, the Trump administration had the border and immigration under control. And so they're not doing anything like that. It's chaos on the border, on our southern border. And here's Psaki stating that we're not doing anything like the Trump administration. Here we go. Listen to this just a second.
Thank you. To follow up on a question I asked about these miners yesterday, Reuters is now reporting that Fort Lee is going to be used as a housing facility for some of these miners in Virginia. Can you confirm whether that's true and if you are considering other military bases around the country?
Well, as we've been just been talking about, obviously we recognize the challenge of having these unaccompanied children come across the border and the influx that we're certainly preparing for and preparing to approach. So, of course, we have to look for facilities and places where we can safely and humanely have these unaccompanied minors in the interim. That would be the decision of HHS. So I would send you to them, but I don't have anything to confirm in terms of additional facilities at this point.
Got it. And I guess just to follow up on Jeremy, I think, well, I don't want to speak for him, but a lot of Americans are saying that, you know, the surges are happening under President Biden's watch after he reversed some previous policies. So does the administration take any accountability for what's happening?
Who are the Americans?
Well, I know you don't want to answer to him, but the former president just released a statement saying that the Biden administration must act immediately to end the border nightmare that they have unleashed onto our nation.
Former President Trump?
Yes.
We don't take our advice or counsel from former President Trump on immigration policy, which was not only inhumane but ineffective over the last 4 years. We're going to chart our own path forward, and that includes treating children with humanity and respect and ensuring they're safe when they cross our borders.
The only problem with Psaki's statement that they're going to keep them safe and everything is that they've encouraged more, it seems like, unaccompanied minors to cross the border. And then it's just a total chaotic mess down there. They don't know really what they're doing. Now, coming up next is a Tucker Carlson. He interviewed Colonel McGregor, okay? And McGregor has extensive combat experience, and he makes some statements about this cockamamie gender culture program that spent over $700 million in Afghanistan to reorder the culture favoring women over there. And this is what Colonel McGregor had to say about that.
Well, no one is talking about it because we ignore the big things. But we have been in Afghanistan for more than 20 years now. Now, why are we there? Is it because of national security? No, it's not, actually. We found out why we're there. Doug, the American invasion of Afghanistan began way back in October of 2001 in response, of course, to 9/11. Afghans were sheltering Saudis who committed the terror attacks. They were trained there. The question is, why do we still have troops there almost 20 years later? And the answer is, not for national security reasons, but because our leaders see Afghanistan as a handy place to conduct a kind of social science experiment, the kind that George Soros might fund. Our leaders believe Afghanistan must be bombed in submission so that its culture changes. Maybe we should bomb them until they accept gender-neutral pronouns. That may be one of the objectives over at the Pentagon. The latest evidence comes from Vox.com. At a recent meeting, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the hopelessly over his head and extremely liberal Mark Milley, got emotional during a meeting about withdrawing from Afghanistan. "We can't do this," Milley said. "If we leave Afghanistan, women's rights will, quote, go back to the Stone Age." So even at the Biden White House, people asked, well, what does that have to do with our national security objectives? One White House official called Milley's little speech, quote, a lot more emotion than substance, and said it wasn't, quote, super logical. But there is a logic to it, and the U.S. government, the Pentagon, and the State Department, both of which have been hopelessly captured by the left while we weren't paying attention, they've been implementing these plans around the world, and particularly in Afghanistan. A report last month from the Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction outlines our government's efforts to achieve, quote, gender equality in Afghanistan. Bet you didn't think that was part of the mission, did you? You thought it was defeating terror. No, it was changing the traditional Afghan family structure. That was the real goal. Why is that our business? Why is that our job? Isn't that cultural imperialism? Shut up. We're doing it anyway. The report notes that the U.S. government has dispersed, quote, more than $787.4 million for activities to, quote, support Afghan women and girls. Now, that doesn't sound bad. Everyone's for women and girls. Has it improved their lives? Has bringing third-wave feminism to Afghanistan been good for the people of Afghanistan? Well, there's no evidence that it has. It's caused a lot of disruption. The Inspector General's report notes, among other things, that there is no word for gender or gender equality in any of the languages used in Afghanistan. It's just not their culture. We don't care. The inspector general also found that our quota system for female politicians in Afghanistan, bet you didn't think we had one of those, but we do, it hasn't worked. In fact, it's backfired. Many of these politicians have never even visited the provinces they, quote, represent. What the hell are we doing, and why are we using the military to do it? Colonel Doug McGregor is a combat veteran, a former senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense. He's been around this world his entire life. He joins us now to explain. Doug, thanks so much for coming on tonight. Why are we using the military to change the Afghan family structure?
Well, I know the justifications sound lofty and moral, but in reality, they fall flat. Afghanistan over the last 20 years has become the leading supplier of illegal heroin in the world. The heroin production industry in Afghanistan employs at least 400,000 Afghans, more people than are in the Afghan military and security police. So it's hard to take that seriously. I think the real point is as follows. We have a globalist ruling elite in Washington, D.C. It now includes the senior leadership in the Pentagon, as well as the State Department, the intelligence community, people on the Hill. And they've decided that wherever we can, we should always intervene. We've institutionalized intervention, interventionism. And these interventions can never end. That once you intervene, you have to stay. Because privately, I think everyone knows that the moment that you withdraw or disengage, a couple of things happen. Number one, everything you claim to have achieved falls apart instantly. And then secondly, it puts the force structure, whether it's in the Marines or the Army or Special Operations Command or anything else, at risk. So you have incentives in a perverse sort of way to do the wrong thing in perpetuity.
But, I mean, it's our military. We can't allow this. And I know that you have fought against this kind of thing for decades, and I really appreciate it. And I'm glad to see you back on this show. Douglas McGregor, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, Tucker.
That's quite an insight by Colonel McGregor, and he's really a stand-up guy. Coming up and finishing our program tonight is Jordan Maxwell, and a very important thing about the dawn of a new day, this mantra, this world mantra. He describes it as what the occult, how the occult are managing us into a world, a new world cultural society, but one without humanity. So here we go with Jordan Maxwell, and I'll come up. I'm not going to play the whole clip, but I'll come up and comment about the last two or three minutes. But here we go with Jordan Maxwell.
And so this was in 67. 1967, as I said, I'm in Glendale, California. I was researching the communist movement. And so I went to the World Book Encyclopedia, and there in the World Book Encyclopedia was a picture of the National Coat of Arms of the Soviet Union and the communist flag. And I already understood the symbols of the communist flag, but my eye caught that National Coat of Arms, and I saw in that symbol something I had seen the Nazis use, all the great nations of the world have used. All the presidents of the United States in their inaugural addresses use the same words and terms. All the senators and congressmen, when they're running for office, use that same term, that same symbol. And so I knew I had stumbled upon something of profound significance. I just didn't know what it meant, but I knew it's important. This is in 67. And so since 67, I have been researching this one term, this one symbol, and the more I find on it, the more I'm amazed at how much there is out there on this one secret symbol that nobody is aware that's right in front of you. It's one of those incredibly fantastic stories of something that is so awesome in scope, and it's sitting right in front of you, and you never saw it. That's how clever these guys are.
So what are you talking about? Because you said there, I mean, we're going to put it on the screen. There's two mountains right. And a rising sun.
Right.
Is that right?
Right.
So what are the words?
But
what does this mean?
But in order, look at, just to be able to see it, which you will be able to put into the video, but just to be able to see it is not sufficient. You need about 25 or 30 years of research to understand the significance of what you're seeing and what it actually means. So you'll be able to show it, and it will be something of interest that people will pick up on. But believe me, there's a bigger story yet. So when you are hearing the term Illuminati or the concepts of secret societies, occult orders, and all that kind of thing, it's actually much bigger than you think.
Are we talking about the rising sun? Are we talking about the rising of the New World Order? We're talking
about
something more.
Something goes all the way back into B.C., back into the ancient world. There is a hidden agenda that's been in operation on this earth for thousands of years. That has been
the Golden Dawn. We're talking about the Golden Dawn and the information there. But what?
Much further back. The Golden Dawn was just one more step and a continuing flow of a particular idea. We are now entering into a new dispensation. I choose that term. Dispensation of time, in which this symbol is going to be everywhere.
Okay.
And I would like to be able to give like a 2.5 to 3 hour presentation just on this one symbol. I had a motion picture producer, a rather successful motion picture producer, and I were talking about doing a movie, and he called it, after I gave him some of the information, he called it, let's call the movie The Symbol. And then we talked about it and said, well, maybe The Hidden Symbol. And I have the contract where he sent me, and here's the movie that we want to do, and we'll call it The Symbol or The Hidden Symbol. And that never got done for all kinds of reasons. But then I see the new movie coming out with Dan Brown, The Hidden Symbol. And I'm thinking, these guys who are smart, intelligent in Hollywood, they are either knowledgeable on this symbol and are releasing it slowly but surely, or there's some kind of an understanding going on that people are starting to look at symbols more now and beginning to put the pieces together like I've been doing for 48 years. And now they are beginning to perceive what I'm talking about. But they haven't got there yet. All the presidents of the United States, all of them, have used the same terms. From George Washington, the terms he used and the things he said were taken directly from the ancient prehistoric world, from the ancient Sumerians, Babylonians, Phoenician Canaanites, ancient Greece, ancient Rome. They all use the same word in the same term.
Okay, what is the term? What are the terms?
The term is the dawn of the new day.
Okay.
And the concept of the dawn of a new day is the sun rising between two mountains. And this goes back to the beginning of Christianity in the 4th century when Constantine codified the religion called Christianity. Christianity is nothing more than, in my opinion, Christianity is the most popular rendition of the ancient cult story. This ancient thing that for thousands of years has been hidden from people, but the masters of the world, the kings and rulers have all understood. Christianity is telling you the same story, but you don't see it. So people are fixated on Jesus and on his ministry and never for a moment suspect that the entire story is the same ancient story that's been told by so many ancient cultures and is today part of the New World Order, Illuminati, Masonic orders around the earth. The entire superstructure of Western civilization has bought into this most ancient story, never realizing for a moment what they're doing. But the whole world is sucking it up. They love it. Never realizing the full implications of what's being said. It's like some kids going into Hollywood, you know, leaving home and they're going to Hollywood. They're going to be in the motion picture capital of the world. Never realizing, no, the streets of Hollywood in this city is not some place for an innocent kid. You're getting yourself involved in something you have no idea in the world how bad it really is. And I think that so many people have bought into the different religious orders, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christadelphians, Worldwide Church of God, Mormon Church, all of these are part and parcel of a larger world movement that's been planned for a long time. And where the world, especially in the Western world, I'm talking mostly in the Western world, because the Arabic world is also heavily involved in this, but that's a different subject. But for the moment, Western civilization is just going over the wall with this thing. Everybody has bought into it. You're seeing it in politics.
I mean, it's in the Japanese flag, so there has to be some acquiescence there with China. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. You know. They're all using it, and they're all buying into this whole new order of the world, never realizing what this actually implies. You know, the very term, novus ordo seclorum, on the back of the dollar bill, that comes from the Roman poet Virgil. In ancient Rome, there was a poet that was appointed by the court of Rome to write poetry for Caesar. And, of course, if you're going to write poetry for Caesar, you want to write something nice that he will like. So Virgil, in one of his poems called Aeneid, wrote about the time when there would come a great world ruler in the seat of Caesar. But this ruler would be awesome in power, to be far more than any man could ever be. And in that time, when he would come, the sun would rise on the novus ordo seclorum, a new world order. And when that one comes, it would be the beginning of a whole new civilization. And the term that Virgil used in Latin was novus ordo seclorum, a new order of the world. This ancient story coming from the ancient and prehistoric world has dominated all the cultures of the world. What that implies, I believe, is there's going to be some kind of a mutation of the human race in order to take the human family on the earth to a new style of life in the universe. And so what will be lost will be your humanity, your ability to show love and kindness to other people. There will be no room for that. Emotions. There will be no room for emotions. There will be no room for the American system of freedom, liberty, and justice for all. That's gone. That's out. There will be no more freedom, liberty, and justice for all. No more family love. No more humanity. You know, man reacting to man. No, all of that's going to be gone.
I'm wondering what the mountains are symbolized by.
Yeah, very good.
Because the mountains, are we talking about the Soviet Union and the U.S.? Are those the mountains where the sun is going to rise between those two mountains?
Or are we
talking about planets?
I think that we're talking about something deeper. The implications being that in all of the ancient world, there was always a concept in theologies of all the ancient cultures of the world used it, of twin towers, twin things, twin churches, twin towers. That's why that whole thing about the New York Twin Towers, that is in your face if you understand the symbolism of twin towers in the Roman Empire and the Grecian Empire and Sumeria, Babylonia, especially in Egypt. They always had two obelisks.
Yes.
They always had the two towers, always. So there is a very powerful significance to the concept of twin towers. Very important. Many of the books on the ancient Middle Eastern religions have pictures of Shemesh, the Hebrew god Shemesh, meaning the sun, rising between the mountains of the east. That goes all the way back to the cuneiform pictures, you know, on the clay pictures from Sumeria and Babylonia or from Iraq. pictures of the god rising between two mountains. Well, I think if you're going to have a whole new race of humans, they are culture. That's why we refer to different races of people as cultures. And culture is something under a microscope, you know, it's like a bacteria. And so that's what we are on the earth. We are a culture. Once this race is finally brought up to speed, and then we can move it to the next plateau. And this is what the Nazis were talking about. This is what Wernher von Braun was talking about. The Nazis were big on this subject and using the symbol and the term that I'm talking about, the symbol between the mountains of the East. England, interesting about this is England has always had a fixation on Egypt. England's big on Egypt. And go to the British Museum and all these different museums. The English were always big on Egypt, but the Germans were not. The Germans were always big on Iraq. That's what Germany was interested in, Babylon. And the reason why, I think, is because the Nazis and the German people in general, or at least the intelligentsia of the German establishment, realized this story that I'm trying to explain. It has to do with Babylon. It has to do with Iraq. And I believe that may be one of the reasons why the U.S. is in Iraq today.
Absolutely.
It has something to do with some, and I know it, this is true because I can prove that the symbols which are being used by the U.S. government today in Iraq is exactly the same symbols that I was telling you about that comes from the Anunnaki, from the Phoenician Canaanites, the Syrians, the Phoenicians, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, ancient Britannia, into America. The entire superstructure of civilization has been using the same word and terms and symbol that is today dominating in Iraq. But most people don't even know. They don't even see it. When you look at children and little animals, you have to know that whoever designed us designed humans and life forms to be beautiful, to be charming, to be a beautiful thing, to live in a beautiful world with children and gorgeous and beautiful things which uplift the spirit, and take this beautiful creation that these gods have created and mutate it into what we want. And so to mutate the whole human race away from their natural evolution of society and humanity into a whole new kind of civilization. And I think that that's probably what I'm here to do, is to call attention to the world that you're being misled by some extraordinarily powerful occult mystical that is changing the evolution of the human race from what it was supposed to be at its creation, as opposed to where the dark powers of the world are now leading the human race into a different world. And what they have in mind for us, you don't want to know.
Well, that's all for Jordan Maxwell. And you can go to YouTube and find many of these complete, lectures, Jordan Maxwell. And he does have a website also. His website is called JordanMaxwellShow.com. JordanMaxwellShow.com. And so that's where you can find many of his writings and so forth. And it's mesmerizing and really outstanding information. And what he's describing here is that these world elitists, much like Colonel McGregor was talking about, that they're commanding the Pentagon now and out of Washington, D.C. and all over the power centers of the world, are about bringing about a world communistic new world order, the dawning of a new day. But also, what's insidious about their plans, and I think Jordan Maxwell laid it out, he said, you do not know what they have planned for us. And this is where we're in the throes of an awakening that has been set into motion by the internet. In other words, we have peer-to-peer pressure, which may be our saving grace. I hope it is. But in opposition to that, we have a consolidation of the media. We have Mockingbird projects under the CIA that started dominating some of the top newspaper publishers and journalists early on in the 50s. And since then, we've had a consolidation into about five or six different media giants. And all of those were really evident in getting rid of Trump. They all consolidated together and manipulated together. And this Time magazine article is an excellent thing to read about how they consorted and colluded together to get rid of Trump. And Trump presented to them the biggest threat that they had ever encountered before. He was on to their pedophilia. He was on to their money system and so forth. And he knew somewhat about 9/11 and other things that he didn't talk publicly about. Steve Bannon talks about things like that and issues like that more than Trump did. And there are other individuals around Trump, too, that know the problems of the JFK assassination, the 9/11, all of these things that on the surface looks like some kind of a terrorist act. But when you start looking in and drilling down into a fact-based system of viewing it and researching it, it looks more and more like these are operations, almost like American Gladio type operations. And Gladio were operations carried out in Europe, see. And many of us, researchers and so forth, think that there's a series of shootings, mass shootings, or whatever, bombings or whatever, that could be, you could say, operations to soften us up. I think Michael Hoffman says psychodramas are unfolding to soften the American public up and to break our will. And maybe that's why that Time magazine article was published. In other words, they're sticking our face in it and saying, look, here's what we did and here's how we did it, and you can't do anything about it. And so these are some of the ideas that Michael Hoffman and others have been talking about over the years. The revelation of the event is one of the ideas where they have to announce sometimes in advance to, and then when we do not oppose, you could say, that opposition, or that opposition is broadcast so that all of their dark, you could say, minions are clued into what's going on, then the success of these very dark, sinister events will be more successful, see. So this is what we're up against. We're up against a transhumanism of taking the goodness of mankind, of humankind, that of love, compassion, and creativity, you could say, and this is being squashed and squandered and destroyed within us to achieve some kind of a new world order where none of that would exist. There was a plan set out called Changing Images of Man out of Stanford Research in the 70s. And it had Joseph Campbell and Margaret Mead, all of those as contributors. And in there they said that the final object is the perennial philosophy, which is like a one world religion or a one world order where everyone thinks and feels and acts the same. But I'm just afraid now that we're up against a very monstrous New World Order, and we've got to stand up and we've got to preserve the American Democratic Republic. And that is what we're all about. Well, thank you for listening, and good night.